It is Friday, June 14th, 2024, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Today, women in STEM in films.
There are so many women in STEM roles in the workforce today, and what we want to do is accurately reflect that on screen.
Highlights from a panel discussion yesterday at the Bentonville Film Festival, plus a career in music.
These days, there's sort of a weird, and I would say slightly negative stigma to saying you're a hard rock band.
The band Baroness is coming back to Arkansas, and we go back three decades for a favorite interview.
Well, I think I had to go through my wilderness. I had to go through a tumbler. I had to go through that speech impediment. I had to go through a whole lot of life that wasn't very easy before I could even see that I was a storyteller and would enjoy it.
Plus Michael Tilley, Becca Martin-Brown, and more. First, the news from NPR.
Northwest Arkansas Pride returns June 28th through the 30th for its 20th annual parade and festival. Other weekend events include the 4th annual Trans March, Glitterville at George's Majestic Lounge, and High Tea Dance and Pool Party at Mount Sequoia. More at nwapride.org or NWA Equality's Facebook or Instagram. Support for KUAF comes from Essence Latin Dance, hosting their June Summer Social June 15th at World's Best Java and Pies in Springdale, starting with a cumbia class at 9 p.m. and the social from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. More information and registration at EssenceLatinDance.com.
It is Friday, June 14th, 2024. Happy Flag Day. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Let's start this Friday, as we do most of our Fridays, with Michael Tilley from Talk Business at Politics. He's in his office in Fort Smith. Michael, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, and I'm glad you mentioned Flag Day. I'd completely forgot about that, but it's a good day.
Highway 70B or Towson Avenue in Fort Smith is going to get a new surface early next month. Is this standard operating procedure?
Well, yeah. Well, it's been long awaited. It's not the big piece of Towson work that we were waiting for, but it's better than what we have now. I mean, right now, Towson Avenue, if I had a company that replaced car shocks and tires and anything else, I would pay the highway department to not resurface it, because it's probably sending them a lot of business right now. It's probably like a road in eastern Ukraine somewhere. It's just pockmarked. I mean, it's just a rough surface. Have I painted a good enough picture of how bad the road is?
I'm getting an idea, yes.
Yeah, good. Okay. But it's about 3.8 miles. I didn't realize it was almost 4 miles. And it's about a $2.6 million job. And so it's going to be overlaid beginning early July. Take about a month, is what the Arkansas Highway Department says. Or I should say it's now the Arkansas Department of Transportation. It's probably more than a month. They're going to do most of the work at night. What the city of Fort Smith and the department were hoping to do was wait until the city could get enough money to relocate sewer and water lines along Towson Avenue. There's a major transmission line through that, but the city couldn't pull it off. So they're going to put this overlay down. There may be some time in the future, who knows, 3-5 years or sooner, that there'll be some more work. And that'll involve putting down, also including sidewalks. It's really, there's no place to walk along Towson. It's one of the, just it's in, unfortunately, it's a road that brings you into downtown Fort Smith, and it just does not give a good impression for the city as it is now. So hopefully this will help. The other thing they're going to do with this is they talk about making specific entrances and exits on the road. Right now, you can just pull in, pull off almost anywhere on the road. It's just, it's not a good scene. So
right.
Looking forward to them getting this fixed. Hopefully it'll look good for a while, and then, like I said, down the road, there'll be some more improvements made both on the road and underneath the road in terms of new water infrastructure.
I guess your advice then to food trucks would be find a different way in to downtown Fort Smith for the
yeah.
inaugural food truck festival. I joke, but it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun a week from Saturday.
Yeah, it's the first one. It's, you know, every once in a while you see one of these and like, that is cool. I'm going to that. That's going to be cool. And so they're going to have, when we talked to them last, had 11 food trucks signed up. They're going to limit it to 12 this first year. So they're almost already there and probably are by the time we're talking now. But it's in downtown Fort Smith. Like I said, June 22nd, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. It's in a parking lot right across Garrison Avenue from the First National Bank. But there's going to be a food truck with lemonades and other fresh drinks. One that I didn't know there was such a thing as whole wheat Canadian pastries, but that's apparently a thing. Donuts, barbecue, chicken wings, catfish, coffee. So I think just pretty much if any time of the day, you'll find something that you're going to like. So I'm going to hit it. Hopefully it'll be a success. The Downtown Business Association is doing this to raise money for their association and just to bring people downtown. So it, as you said, it's the first one. Hopefully they'll continue to grow from here.
Also beginning soon will be this partnership between the campus, the Arkansas Tech University campus that's in Ozark, so ATU Ozark, and Public School District of Van Buren. This is going to allow students of Van Buren schools, the way I understand it, to take college classes in automation technology and actually get college credit as they're doing it?
Yes. And, you know, ATU Ozark, and I'll preface it by saying I'm an Arkansas Tech University graduate, so I'm a little biased here, but ATU Ozark has done a good job historically, I think, of tying in workforce education with regional school districts. This is another one of those efforts. You know, you hear a lot of people talk about, hey, not everybody needs to go to school. We need to be teaching these students, these high school kids, more hands-on, more career stuff. Well, here you go. But it's a program. They teach fundamentals of electricity, industrial automation, industrial robotics, programmable type controllers. For advanced manufacturing, this is what a lot of this is for. And, you know, any region needs a good workforce in that area, not only to fill existing needs, but to show, you know, potential companies, hey, come here, we're producing the kind of workforce you need. And yeah, the students can finish when they finish high school. They could have up to 15 credit hours that they could apply to an associate's degree. I mean,
that's a semester. Yeah.
Yeah, free. So anyway, it's a great program. Kudos to both ATU Ozark and Van Buren Public School District for making this happen.
And the classes are on Van Buren High School campus, so you don't even have to leave the high school.
Yes. I mean, you've made it very convenient for the students. I mean, there's no reason. If you have any aptitude or interest in this area, there's no reason not to do this.
When we last talked, the last thing we talked about was the Fort Chaffee Redevelopment Authority. This authority that has four public entities. The public entities want it to dissolve. They say that its time has ended. Last we talked, this first dissolution meeting was going to happen. We didn't know if the press was going to be able to attend. Get us up to date.
Well, we were able to attend, cool. And that's primarily because the meeting was held in the city offices, and City Administrator Carl Gefkin, to his credit, said if any time we have these meetings in the city offices, the media will be invited. Now, we were not sure if Daniel Mann, who's head of the FCRA, he's the one that said no media. He didn't want media at any of the meetings. We weren't sure if he was going to see us there and walk out, but he didn't. Neither did Dean Gibson, who's the chair of the FCRA. But so they did have their first meeting. Didn't really accomplish a lot, I guess would be my assessment. I could be wrong. The beneficiaries, you had the Greenwood mayor there, Barling mayor, Barling city administrator, Sebastian County Judge Steve Holtz, Fort Smith officials, including Gefkin, were there, and they really pressed for a date, a dissolution date. But Mann and Gibson pushed back. They said, look, we need to handle on how many acres we have left and kind of a revenue and expense structure, and then we can kind of set a better date. They're going to do that. Long story short, it's a little more complicated than that, but they're going to get that info pulled together. Now, I think the rub there is, are they going to pull it together quickly, or are they going to take their dear sweet time about it? Because I think the beneficiaries want it, you know, let's move. Let's get this mm-hmm. going. You know, let's not meet every 3 or 4 months. Let's start meeting, you know, more frequent than that. So that's going to be what we're watching for. How soon or how long will it take for the FCRA to pull some of that data together? It's really data they ought to kind of already have.
Yeah.
But so they're going to pull that together, kind of have it, I guess, in report form, get it back to the beneficiaries, and then they'll meet again. That's kind of where we left it. It didn't really move the needle other than just kind of puts another, I wouldn't say hurdle, that's not the right word. It just puts another thing in place that has to happen before they even begin talking about a date for a possible date for when this thing is dissolved.
But it doesn't sound like Greenwood, Barling, Sebastian County, or Fort Smith are at all interested in letting this lag. It sounds like they are going to want to have this dissolve.
Yes, and they're pressing for that. You know, some of the city resolutions that were passed, I know the city of Fort Smith and I think the city of Barling called for December 31st, 2025, which is, you know, a year and a half, 18 months away, I guess. The FCRA boss has said that Mr. Mann has said it could be anywhere from 3 to 10 years.
Oh.
That put some people off. So I don't know. That there's going to have to be some compromise somewhere, isn't there?
Yeah. 3 to 10 is a wide range.
Yes. Yes, it is. So that was a little off-putting to some of the beneficiaries.
Well, you can read about all of this and so much more at talkbusiness.net. Michael and I will be back together next week for our first Friday summer conversation of 2024. You looking forward to that?
Oh, gosh, the year's gone by. All right. Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to the conversation. I'm just not looking forward to the summer heat.
I gotcha. Thank you, Michael.
Crass political memorabilia is nothing new. But words on one T-shirt regularly sold at Trump rallies are so vulgar, we're not going to say them in this promo.
It's a little over the top. I get it. But they're just words.
Who's buying these T-shirts and what do they really think about wearing them? Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition, tomorrow morning beginning at 7. This is a Friday edition of Ozarks at Large. The Bentonville Film Festival is continuing through the weekend, and this week we've been attending some of the panel discussions. Yesterday, there was a discussion dedicated to the portrayal of women in STEM, and it continued an exploration of how entertainment can do more than just entertain. In this excerpt, we hear actor Melissa Navia talk about how she was influenced by watching STEM portrayals when she was young and how she channeled that influence for her role as Erica Ortega's in Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
So we were discussing my character, Lieutenant Erica Ortega's on Strange New Worlds is the helmsman of the Enterprise, so she's a pilot. And what I have found meeting fans who are, you know, fans of the character and of me as the actor portraying her, is that I meet a lot of people who want to become a pilot because of Erica. And that's something that I didn't really anticipate going into the role, but of course I'm like, oh, that makes total sense. And so, you know, seeing girls as small as this, and also women, and also boys, and also people of all ages who are telling me not only that they are pilots, that they want to become pilots, that they, you know, that they have always wanted to become pilots, and it's something that they were pursuing in the past, and you know, are finally doing so now. Something that it occurred to me is that a lot of times people are surprised to see a female pilot, but I'm like, that shouldn't be the case, because when you look at the pioneers in the aviation industry, there were so many women, but we either don't hear a lot about them or we just kind of have forgotten that they were such a pivotal part of the industry. And so being here, I learned about Louise Thayton, who was an aviation pioneer, and I see some heads nodding. And so I was like, I want to go to Thayden Field tomorrow. And anyone I've kind of spoken, you know, about it, they were just like, oh yeah, Louise Thayden. So this idea of, like, as we're speaking about women in STEM and portraying them on screen, it's this idea of not just that we're putting more women in STEM roles on screen, but there are so many women in STEM roles in the workforce today. And what we want to do is accurately reflect that on screen. So not only are we inspiring and encouraging the workforce of tomorrow, but we are reflecting the world as it is today on screen. Because so often I find that people think, you know, that oh well, women aren't in this particular profession as much as men, but that's not the case. And we have a responsibility in the entertainment industry to accurately portray that in a way that that reflects the world as it is and as we want it to be and as it should be.
So I want to stay on you. So you grew up watching Star Trek as a kid. Did you ever imagine you'd play this role? And part B of that is, you know, you said that I became a stickler for knowing how the controls of the Enterprise bridge worked. So talk about that.
Yes. Yeah, so I consider myself a working actor, and I will be until my last breath, which means that I have, you know, been working really hard to tell stories and to make a living at it. And, you know, for a very long time, I've found that, you know, because, you know, casting directors have told me I'm specific and they don't always know where to place me. And, you know, it's always been this thing of, you know, do you try to become something else so that, you know, you're easier to cast, or do you just remain who you are, true to yourself? And you say, you know, one day the right role will come. And that is kind of what I've done. And so since I was a kid, you know, I've wanted to play these roles. I've wanted to see on screen what I didn't necessarily see growing up, but I always didn't occur to me that that was a problem. It was always just like, well, I'll just grow up and be that one day. And learning about the Gina Davis Institute, and I've spoken about this before, we're watching the documentary This Changes Everything, really kind of made me think differently about the way that this industry has kind of treated female roles, and realizing that I've kind of always given a pass to the industry when I has, as you know, since I was a little girl, looked up to male roles as my role models, which is great, but also like it should have been easier for me to find female role models as a kid and characters that I wanted to grow up and be. And so when I was younger, like my Star Trek was The Next Generation. And what people always ask me is, they're like, were you a Trekkie growing up? And I'm like, well, I feel like Star Trek is so ubiquitous that all of us in some way, do you know, Star Trek has been a part of our lives. So I'm like, I never considered myself a Trekkie, but I knew The Next Generation. I, you know, the theme song, the opening to TNG is still, you know, one of my favorite of all time. The voice of Patrick Stewart, you know, as Captain Jean-Luc Picard, you know, basically, you know, talking about one of the greatest feats and, you know, that we as humans have undertaken, which is space travel. Like, hearing him talk about it still gets me very emotional. But did I think I was going to be in Star Trek? I totally didn't. I knew that, because part of, like, surviving in this industry is being a little bit cocky and unreasonable. I was always just like, I'm going to make it. Like, I have to make it. Like, I didn't know what it was going to be. But I knew that there was going to be a role that if I stuck to it and to my guns, that, you know, I would make it. I just didn't know what it was. Now, when it turned out to be Star Trek, I have so many people in my life who have known me for years, and they were just like, oh yeah, we always knew it was going to be Star Trek. And I'm like, really? I'm like, I wish somebody had told me that, you know, 20 years ago. Things would have been slightly easier. But now that I am in this role, like, it very much is a dream role. I've had the honor and the pleasure of playing a lot of very interesting, intelligent, nuanced roles throughout my career, and many of them have been pilots, soldiers, even played an astronaut. And so what I've also found is that that's not always necessarily the case. Like, a lot of my female acting acquaintances and friends, you know, they oftentimes, you know, have a lot of auditions where they don't get these very rounded out characters. But I, for whatever reason, I've not always gotten a lot of auditions, but when I have gotten auditions, they've been just very cool, layered roles. So I somehow get typecast as pilots and soldiers and astronauts, and I'm like, that's cool. And then in terms of being on the bridge and learning the helm controls, like, our franchise has a fandom that's unlike any other. They watch everything. And so for me, if it's real to me, it's real to the fans. And so that's also part of kind of what's taken me down this pilot's journey, where it's just like, you know, I hear from Air Force veterans and Navy veterans and pilots of all kinds saying that it feels like Erica is piloting the Enterprise, and then telling me how amazing they feel as fans watching it. And so then that kind of, you know, tells me that I'm doing something right, and that I should keep doing it.
Melissa Navia speaking yesterday during a panel discussion about women in STEM in film. The panel discussion was part of the 10th annual Bentonville Film Festival. That's continuing through the weekend. Our thanks to Emerson Alexander for providing us with that recording. This is Ozarks at Large. And later today on our show, we dip back to a show that aired 30 years ago this month, for one of our favorite conversations ever. And that conversation shares some themes with what Melissa was talking about yesterday, finding passion in your profession.
When babies are born, their fists are closed. And if you look at a newborn baby, you see they keep those little hands tight. And about 3 or 4 days after they're in the world, those little hands relax. And they're just all over the place moving about. God put something in their hands when they came into the world. It was what they were supposed to do.
Storyteller Jackie Torrence came to the University of Arkansas in June 1994. And we'll hear part of the conversation that aired on Ozarks at Large 3 decades ago in today's second half hour. This is Ozarks at Large, and it's a Friday edition of Ozarks at Large. And like most Fridays, Becca Martin Brown, the arts and entertainment editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, is with us to help us sort of navigate the next few days, what we want to do with our time. Welcome back, Becca.
Oh, I don't think there's anything I can do to help you navigate it because there's too much. But I can throw some things at you and see what sticks.
There you go.
So the big news this week, of course, is the Bentonville Film Festival.
Right. And we've had some excerpts from some of the panels of industry types on our show, well, even earlier this hour, and there's still more to go.
Well, April Wallace is out covering it for the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and she's got all sorts of things at nwaonline.com. But she wants me to tell you that for families, she recommends the free Afro Unicorn Kids Show. At noon Saturday at the Outdoor Theater at the Momentary. A really interesting backward story of somebody developing product, and now it's going to be a show. And Saturday evening, there's a free screening of Beetlejuice at 7:30 at the same Outdoor Theater, complete with a costume contest. You can see the whole schedule at bentonvillefilm.org. Now, you know, of course, that my heart belongs to live theater.
Yes, it does.
And there's nothing better than brand new live theater.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
This weekend and next is the 16th annual Arkansas New Play Festival presented by Theater Squared. And it's all over the place. They have staged readings at Ovations Plus, formerly Trike Theater in Bentonville, The Medium, formerly the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale, and at T2 in Fayetteville. So here's the lineup. A new play that takes Pushkin's Eugene Onegin, combines it with some Tchaikovsky opera, and puts it in 1940s rural Arkansas. A new play called Have to Believe We Are Magic, which is a coming-of-age story filled with roller skating, friendship, sex, love, self-discovery, you know, all the things. Edie Yaw and Diamonds Grove. Set at the edge of an old U.S. mill town, it's the story about two black young people working in an amusement park with ghosts.
Ooh, they got you at ghosts, didn't they?
They did get me a ghost.
Yeah.
The next one got me at the title. Malcolm X and Red Fox washing dishes at Jimmy's Chicken Shack in Harlem. Two good friends, a long hot summer of heartbreak and betrayal and racial uprisings in Harlem. And then Sherlock Holmes, The Timbers Family File.
This whole thing sounds like it was put together for you specifically. Ghost, Sherlock Holmes. They are going for the Becca Martin Brown demographic here.
Well, this is Sherlock Holmes reimagined as a Latinx detective.
Oh, right. This is put together by the theater group.
The Latinx theater.
The Latinx theater group, yes.
So interesting. And then there's a young playwright showcase that's on the 22nd and a new Sarah Laux play that's free called Songs for Drunk Cowboys Who May Also Be Women, an anti-musical for fools only. $50 will get you a pass to all the shows. A single show is $15. You can find out more at ArkansasNewPlayFest.com. And also, if you're a theater junkie, on stage this weekend, Little Women Told in Dance by Natural State Performing Arts, 7 o'clock today at the Arkansas Arts Academy in Rogers. Responders, which is a world premiere of a play that was workshopped at the Arkansas New Play Festival.
Exactly.
By Joseph Scott Ford. And it continues through the end of the month. And The Shepherd of the Hills is an original musical based on the Harold Bellwright book presented by Northwest Arkansas Lights Up Theater. One day only, 1 o'clock and 5:30 tomorrow at St. Joseph Catholic Hall in Tawnytown. It's free, but you should go get tickets at NWA Lights Up Theater at GoDaddy. Also this weekend, there's an evening of chamber music with A String Fort Smith at 7 o'clock tonight at St. Bartholomew's Episcopal Church in Fort Smith. That is free. You can find out more at astringfortsmith.com. There's a Pride poetry reading at 7 o'clock tonight with Crystal Stone at Phoenix Arts in Fayetteville. There is a Riding the Rails Railroad History Program by the Boston Mountain Chapter of the National Railway Historical Society at 10 o'clock tomorrow at the Fayetteville Public Library. Or Candy Songs and the Backyard Bugs are performing at 10:30 tomorrow at the Springdale Public Library. Here's a great chance to get in trouble. The Best Friends Super Adoption Event.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Where they are bringing together a bunch of animal rescue organizations for one big speed dating extravaganza. This is 11 to 4 tomorrow and Sunday at the Best Friends Pet Resource Center in Bentonville. Of course, they'll let you in free. How they let you out is entirely up to you.
Right.
And then there is also a movie night tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the King Opera House in Van Buren, hosted by the Fort Smith International Film Festival. The film is Larry Foley's If This Walk Could Talk.
You know, Larry's got so many movies, it's hard to remember them all, but this one's about Senior Walk in the University of Arkansas.
And everything Foley does is golden.
I just remembered. I'm one of the narrators of that film.
Oh, you just remembered that.
I did. I forgot that I had done that. That was, I think, during the pandemic.
Seriously, you've got to slow down, dude.
Yeah, I do.
Tell you what. It's a $5 suggested donation, and you get to see the King Opera House, which is worth $5 on its own.
I agree.
And then Sunday, Mountain Street Stage with the Damn Neighbors Bluegrass Music Group at 2 o'clock at the Fayetteville Public Library. And Sunday, if you'll come back and read What's Up, we'll talk about opera in the Ozarks and spring classics with the Arkansas Philharmonic and the Silver Dollar City Summer Festival and a really intriguing art exhibit by Amy Scoggins at the Fort Smith Regional Art Museum. I love y'all. I'll talk to you next week.
Becca Martin Brown, Arts and Entertainment Editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
This is Dave Smith, host of Ozark Highlands Radio. This week we'll take another special road trip to Rogers, Arkansas Rail Yard Live Concert Series featuring post-folk Newgrass phenomenon Arkansas. Jeff Glover offers a recording of Ozark originals The Bill Sky Family, and writer Aubrey Atwater traces the peregrination of a tune this week on Ozark Highlands Radio.
Ozark Highlands Radio, tomorrow night beginning at 6. Baroness is an American heavy metal band, originally from Savannah, Georgia. They'll be performing at the Hall in Little Rock Monday night. Ozarks at Large's Sophia Narani spoke with members John Baisley and Gina Gleason about the band's newest album, Stone, what attendees can expect to see at the upcoming show, and just how to define their sound.
I always think of Baroness because I was a big fan before I joined the band, so I have a I'm lucky to have a unique perspective on being a fan and then kind of jumping in. But I always think just hard rock is a good title in the way that like Zeppelin is like hard rock, but they also have acoustic songs and like other elements and like other things going on. And they take like long journeys and take time for the songs to unfold and stuff like that. I don't know if you, or like Queen, it's maybe a better.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it feels weird to say. It feels weird to say something like classic rock because I feel like that's very misleading.
Yeah.
But
hard rock.
But it or hard rock, you know, like any of the rocks tend to feel a little bit misleading. But it's also hard to say that we're a heavy metal band or a punk band. None of them fit accurately, but all of them are, I guess, parts of our DNA. Generally under the category of rock, I guess, back at rock. Yes, hard rock.
Yes. I like that answer. No, and you know, I like to ask that, but a lot of artists are similar in the sense they don't want to have to define themselves to one particular sound. So I can appreciate that.
No, but I think it's I think the reason is because these days there's sort of a weird and I would say slightly negative stigma to saying you're a hard rock band. It just makes me think like barroom blues rock, George Thorogood kind of thing. I don't know why. I don't know if that's a rational talk. Maybe we're interesting rock.
I like that. So your new album, Stone, it's your sixth overall album. I want to talk about the sound and the process behind that. I know that you guys have said it yourself that you don't like to repeat your sounds, that you like to do things differently every time. So if you want to go into that album itself, how it compares to things you guys have done in the past.
Yeah, I joined the band about 7 or 8 years ago. So it, compared to our last record that came out, the making of this one was quite different because we did it ourselves, engineered and produced the record ourselves in an Airbnb, like many bands during COVID, where that kind of seemed like the best option to do things, where it's, you know, sort of in isolation and kind of, you know, at the time we were being conscious of who we were potting with, not to bring back that verbiage that everybody loved from, but that was quite a unique experience for making a record. So.
And I think also it was certainly the circumstances that we were in 2020 made that the more responsible, more likely way to create the record. But I think that having said, you know, putting that aside for a second, it's always been sort of a dream of ours. Or no, it's never been a dream of ours. It's always been our reality that we try whenever possible to maintain as much independence in the things that we do as is possible and as is realistic. You know, all the members of this band, you know, present and past, have come from some type of a DIY community. And I think the spirit of, you know, writing our own music can extend into things like producing the music. I mean, it seems like a natural and sort of self-evident thing. After you've been playing music for so long, you eventually, you know, you start to see that things like, you know, or for instance, when you're a young band, you know, you learn how to book your tours, you learn how to, you know, you do your driving, you sell your own merch, you do all of those things. And I think that makes us, as we, you know, as the band got older and more, you know, popular or successful, it gave us a better attitude in terms of how we would hire people to do the things that we were all of a sudden no longer capable of doing. But then what became obvious to me over the years is that the idea that you have to go to somebody external to produce a record became less the status quo and more of an option, whereby we have basically learned all the, you know, the basics. And I mean the basics of engineering and recording and production. So it seemed like with the situation we're in 2020, why wouldn't we take another step towards further, you know, complete, total artistic independence? I mean, we write our own music and we write our lyrics, and I'm responsible for the majority of our visual identity, meaning artwork and packaging, things like that. But we also have our own record label. So it just seemed like, it only seemed like common sense for us to, you know, to become our own producers and our own recordists and our own engineers, because we trust each other, because we're in a band. We love playing music with each other. We love each other. And our four opinions are the best four opinions for this music. And we felt confident that with a respect towards, you know, with a healthy respect internal to the band, making the album as a four piece without outside engineers and without that outside help would be something that would yield a really interesting and hopefully positive result, which I think it has.
Going into that a little bit, you know, you guys were founded back in 2003. You guys have been around for a while, and it's kind of having to adjust to the new ways that the music industry has evolved, with DIY production being a lot more common. How does it feel to kind of reflect upon that?
It can be a dangerous way of looking at the music industry to say that we have to adjust to it. I think the important thing is, in recent years, and you know, and across the history of this band, the more important thing that we've done, and the more difficult thing, and the more subtle thing, is that we've tried to figure out ways to make the industry or the business of music work for us. And I think that it's an important distinction, not in terms of like ego or narcissism, but more importantly, in the fact that we consider ourselves artists. And I think that as artists, we have to take that definition seriously. And we have to apply some rules and some philosophical thinking to that. And one of the most important things is, and I think this is an important a lesson that I would say, I feel comfortable saying all four of us grew up in an era where the music that was most important to us was performed and written and released by innovators, by provocateurs, by artists, by people whose messaging may have in fact flown directly in the face of the idea of the music business. So I think it's been a really interesting thing for two decades to have been part of a commercial enterprise and a commercial machine that we actually are in many ways philosophically or artistically opposed to, you know. So the interesting thing is, are we outsiders, throwing rocks at the castle? Are we trying to put this castle under siege, or which would be impossible for a band our size? We just can't make an impact that way. Or can we somehow find ourselves inside this system and try to make a positive change? And whatever positive change we can will be should be sufficient, at least for our audience, and maybe opening their minds up to a different way of behaving, a different way of writing music, a different way of touring, a different way of presenting ourselves in such a way that maybe our fans who would only otherwise have had access to the more vacuous upper echelons of commercial music, maybe now we can act as a gateway to something that's a little bit more unique and a little bit more individualistic and a little bit more underground. And so I think that we're sort of in that middle gray area where we are desperately trying to make this incredibly difficult system called the music business work in our favor. And it is every day a job.
So you guys are on tour right now. You guys are currently touring. You're going to be playing in Little Rock on June 17th. Have you been to Arkansas before? Do you like touring? Do you like touring in Arkansas?
Yes, you all.
It's been an age since we played in Little Rock.
I don't know if I played in Little Rock with you guys.
Yeah. I don't think we played in Little Rock. I think last time we played in Little Rock was with the Deftones in 2009 on the Diamond Eyes tour. We played some big theater there. And before that, we played at Downtown Music a bunch of times. But I think it's been 12, 13, 14, 15, 30, 60, 75 years. Little Rock. So yeah, we're excited to come back for sure.
Gina Gleason and John Baisley from Baroness, who will be performing at the Hall in Little Rock Monday night. To learn more about the show, you can go to littlerockhall.com.
Let the joyous news be spread. The wicked old witch at last is dead.
You're listening to Victor Young and his orchestra, and you're on the sound beat.
Ding dong, the witch is dead. Witch, oh witch.
Wicked witch.
Ding dong, the wicked witch is dead.
Wicked author Gregory Maguire did much to elicit sympathy for the Wicked Witch of the West. He gave her a name, something original Oz author L. Frank Baum didn't do. Elphaba is a phonetic play on Baum's initials. Go ahead, L-F-B. And, I mean, how would you feel if someone dropped a house on your sister?
Let them know the wicked witch is dead.
The main witches of Baum's Oz books are the rulers of the four cardinal directions. Good in the north and south, and wicked east to west. Glinda the Good was the only one to get a name in the first book, though her colleague in the north was later named Locasta. Our artichoke-hued friend to the west occupied the land of the Winkies, accomplished tinsmiths. When Dorothy gave her the business, the Tin Woodman replaced her quite nicely. Margaret Hamilton's witch was so wicked, some of her scarier scenes were cut. So was her visit to Sesame Street. Find out more at soundbeat.org. Soundbeat is produced at the Belfer Audio Archive, Syracuse University Library. I'm Brett Barry.
Monday on Ozarks at Large, Harry Thomason had a childhood in Hampton, Arkansas. A brief career as a high school football coach, he helped create one of the most iconic sitcoms of the 1980s and 90s, and he worked to help get a fellow Arkansan into the White House.
I never want to hear the word ticket again as long as I live, because it's very tough. I mean, we started out to make this the most accessible inauguration ever, and we're trying to take as many, as care of as many people as we can. That doesn't include only actors. That includes farmers in Ohio that worked on the campaign, too, and we've tried to be very even-handed.
Harry Thomason is a producer, director, Arkansan, and storyteller, and we'll follow his life from small-town Arkansas to Hollywood with the aid of Pryor Center Archives on Mondays, Ozarks at Large. And a storyteller plays a big part of the next few minutes of today's show. About once a month, we search our Ozarks at Large archives to discover what we were doing the same month many years ago. This June, we landed on our show that aired on June 4th, 1994, 30 years ago this month. Jackie Torrance was known as the matriarch of American storytelling. She recorded more than a dozen albums of stories, performed in front of audiences all over the country and the world, including in front of performances at Lincoln Center and the Kennedy Center. She also authored two books, and in 1998 was included as one of the black women who changed America, along such figures as Rosa Parks, Shirley Chisholm, and Leontine Price. In 1994, she performed at the University of Arkansas as a guest of the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies. Our conversation took place in Old Main, and it remains one of my favorites since I've been doing this show. We discussed her childhood in Appalachia, her passion for storytelling, and the speech impediment she had when she was younger.
When I was 14, my English teacher, ninth grade English teacher, heard my speech changing. And she worked with me for 4 years, taught me about standing up on stage and pronouncing my words, and I had to learn long poems. She wasn't a speech therapist, so she didn't know exactly what to do, but she knew how to set my words and that I had a memory, and that if I would remember to speak exactly how she taught me, then the impediment would still be there. As it is, but I just remember to say words a different way. I'd have to learn things like, I remember learning a poem called Go Down Death. Weep not, weep not. She is not dead. She's only just gone home. Day before yesterday. God was looking down from his great throne, and I had to pronounce each word so that she could hear it. And I did it over and over and over again. And you do that over and over again, and it becomes habit.
Has she seen you perform?
Yes. She's 89 years old, and she's so proud of me, and I am of her. And every time I perform in front of children, and when they applaud, I said, if you like what I did, turn around and thank your teacher, because it was a teacher that has me in the condition that I'm in now. She is a wonderful lady, and she not only helped me, but a whole era of black children.
Despite being a born storyteller, Jackie Torrance did not become a professional storyteller overnight. In fact, it happened when she was almost forced into it by chance.
I worked in High Point, North Carolina, in the public library. And I was a reference librarian, pretty good reference librarian. I could find questions that nobody had ever asked, you know. And one morning in January, it snowed, and the children's librarian didn't come in. And the kids were in the library tearing up the place. And my boss came over and said, somebody's got to do something about those children. And when he said that, I just went in the opposite direction. And he said, since you're leaving, why don't you just go up the steps and stop them? But what am I supposed to do? He said, read him a story. It's story day. Read him a story. I said, I don't know anything about that. He said, well, try. And I argued with him. And finally, he said, I'm going to give you 2 minutes. I said, okay, I'm going. And I guess there were about 14 children there. And I settled them into this corner, the story corner, to keep them quiet. And I suggested that I would tell Little Red Riding Hood and the Three Bears and, all the little childhood stories. And they looked at me and said, we know all of that and we don't want to hear you tell it. And then I remembered when I was in elementary school, Miss Corrine Thomas, the librarian, used to read to us from a book that she would never let us see. And there was one story we used to ask for over and over again. It was called Sody Saleratus. And she used to read that story. It was about a bear that ate up an old man, an old woman, a little girl, and a little boy, and all of that, you know. It was wonderful. Well, I didn't remember all the details of that story, but I remembered my reaction to the story, and I thought they would probably like it too, and they did. They said, can you make that bear eat up something else? Yes, the bear ate up the books and the librarian and the library in the street and all the cars. And by the time the bear had eaten up the world, you know, I had told that story about 5 times. And my reaction that morning was, I like that. I like the reaction of the children. I liked looking into their faces. And I thought, I'd like to do that again. But I didn't get an opportunity to do it again until about a month later when the children's librarian said, I hear these children asking for you all the time. She said, come and tell stories and let me hear you. And I did. And she said, how about taking the job as the storyteller? They like you. And that's when it started. And 15 children turned into 200. And 200 turned into 4 story hours a week. And from then on, that was it. I was hooked.
Children may be captivated by Jackie Torrance's tales, but there is a lesson here for those listening of all ages. Torrance cleared many hurdles to be able to make a living at doing exactly what she loves to do.
I often give the example of, at about the age of 4, my grandmother would say, it's time to go to bed. Go over and kiss your granddaddy goodnight. And I'd climb up on my granddaddy's lap, and I'd say, granddaddy, I'm going to bed. And I'd give him a great big kiss, and my granddaddy would turn around. He said, well, good night, honey. He'd say, now you remember, you be real careful up there in that bed. You stay in that bed, because it's monsters up there. They might drag you out of the bed, and they just might put you in the keyhole. Well, now, to a 4-year-old, I go up the steps hollering and crying. I don't want to go to bed. Please, Grandma, don't make me go to bed. My grandma would get me upstairs, and she'd set me down on the bed, and she'd say, listen, your granddaddy always tells you that, and I always tell you, don't you even worry about getting out of that bed and getting in the keyhole. You're too big to get in the keyhole. Plus, and then she would tell me this wonderful tale about how God protects you, how he sends angels, how there are guardian angels looking out for you. And if the angels are not enough, there's mint planted at both sides of the house, and there's no evil spirits, monsters, or anything like that gonna pass the scent of that mint. And just the fact that my grandmother was sitting there telling me these stories about the angels and the mint, I closed my eyes and I slept all night long in the security that she had told me that. Children need the reassurance. And when they hear stories from mom and dad, a big sister, a big brother, even, it's fine. But we need to do it. You know, just that one-on-one, just before bed or any time of the day, that's very important.
You know, just talking to you, it seems to me that you would be such an inspiration for people who want to end up doing something they love to do.
Well, I want to help them out.
I mean, it would seem that the odds were against you. I mean, a speech impediment.
That's why I say I was groomed. You know, sometimes when you read stories in the Bible, every time God had some job for somebody to do, he would send them out into the worst part. You'd have to go through the wilderness. And if you want to smooth out a real rough rock, you put it in this tumbler with all the other rocks, and soon it comes out smooth and it's just fit and it's beautiful. Well, I think I had to go through my wilderness. I had to go through a tumbler. I had to go through that speech impediment. I had to go through a whole lot of life that wasn't very easy before I could even see that I was a storyteller and would enjoy it.
Would you say you're living a dream?
I think so. I think so. My grandmother told me that when babies are born, their fists are closed. And if you look at a newborn baby, you see they keep those little hands tight. And about 3 or 4 days after they're in the world, those little hands relax. And they're just all over the place moving about. God put something in their hands when they came into the world. It was what they were supposed to do. Now, when it gets into the body, then the child can open his hand then. But you spend the rest of your life searching for what it was that God put in your hand. And when you find it, you're supposed to take care of it and make it grow. And then when you face him again, he's going to say, "Where is the gift I gave you?" Are you going to say, "Well, God, you know, I didn't quite find it because I had a speech impediment. And I was trying to get my speech right, you know." Or, "Well, God, you see, you know, I was spending all this time trying to lose weight and look good, and I didn't quite find it." Or are you going to say, "Here it is, and I got a little extra with it." And he's going to say, "Well done."
Jackie Torrance, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You're quite welcome.
Jackie Torrance, the story lady, talking with me in Old Main in June 1994. She performed at the U of A then as a guest of the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies. The conversation first aired on Ozarks at Large on June 4th, 1994. We reach back into our archives about once a month. This is Ozarks at Large for June 14th, 2024. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Contributors to our Friday show included Sophia Narani, Michael Tilley, and Becca Martin Brown. Our appreciation to Emerson Alexander, YK Karen Bauer, and Jasper Logan for collecting sound from the Bentonville Film Festival for us this week. Our archives are easier to access thanks to support from the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle. Our theme, written and performed by Daryl Sean. Daryl's most recent CD of solo guitar music is titled Still Here. Our underwriting director at KUAF is Ryan Versey. Our membership director is Lisa Alt. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back Monday to start a brand new week of daily editions of Ozarks at Large. Listeners in Northwest Arkansas and the Arkansas River Valley can hear weekend Ozarks at Large Sunday morning at 9. I'm Kyle Kellums.
Northwest Arkansas Pride returns June 28th through the 30th for its 20th annual parade and festival. Other weekend events include the 4th annual Trans March, Glitterville at George's Majestic Lounge, and High Tea Dance and Pool Party at Mount Sequoia. More at nwapride.org or NWA Equality's Facebook or Instagram. Music Moves presents the 2024 Freedom Festival, celebrating Juneteenth, Saturday, June 15th on the Shiloh Square in downtown Springdale. This community event features live music from Cameo, Twista, and Donnell Jones with food trucks, giveaways, a kids zone, and more. Information at freedomfestivalar.com.